You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Let's bring him in. One of our favorite guests. Happened to talk to him before the Thanksgiving holiday, and that, of course, is Buster Olney. Good morning, Buster. How you doing?
What's going on, guys?
We're hungry for free agents, as Mets fans, on the day before Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I can understand that. I think you're going to have to wait. It's going to be like the post-Thanksgiving rush, more likely, when they start getting into it. I've talked to some agents, folks around baseball last night and today, and you know, my question to them was, you know, how organized do you feel like the Mets are right in this moment? And the response that I got back was, not especially. That they're the sense of the Mets is the Mets are, while they're, you know, they're doing the business of baseball and making contact with other teams, that they're scrambling as Sandy works to find his general manager. But I don't think it matters this offseason because there are just so few teams that are spending money. The agents are saying that right now, their sense is that there are only two teams that are going to be aggressive. One are the Mets and the other is the Blue Jays. And while, you know, there'll be other teams that'll be making some moves, at this moment when we're talking about free agents and teams ready, signaling to be aggressive right now, just the Mets and the Blue Jays. And so I think whenever the Mets are ready to do business, the agents for the big free agents are going to be sitting and waiting for their phone calls.
Buster, what was the impetus for Sandy not to hire a president of baseball operations? Just the guy they wanted wasn't available?
I think that's probably part of it. I have not confirmed this. I would not at all be shocked if they did call on David Forst, who, you know, works for the Oakland Athletics. Sandy knows, from his time there, that they called the Indians about Chris Antonetti. They may have essentially had a lot of their overtures deflected. There is the sort of the pie in the sky dream about Theo, but I don't think that's anything that's going to happen anytime soon. Maybe in a year from now, Theo will be in a better place, emotionally to be ready to dive back into something. Maybe, you know, the Mets and Sandy are ready to be ready to talk to him at that point. I just don't think the timing was right. If Steve Cohen had been put in place in August, and then Sandy was put in place, and they had lined up all those conversations, I think they would have been in a better spot. So I think it's going to be more of, as Sandy said the other day, he's going to oversee things, and they'll wind up making a hire for a GM. And I wish I could tell you who that's going to be, but I don't know.
But Buster, being realistic, is it two guys in a trade, free agent-wise? Is it three free agents? Like set the expectations realistic, but certainly excited for the Mets fan heading into this free agency period. Like, what do you think we can expect here?
And great stuff. I talked to a source the other day about their situation. He said, all the things you're hearing about them going after the big dogs, he said, it's all true.
Nice.
They are lined up to do that, and they're in a position to do that. They've never had that massive big market payroll that the franchise and the fans deserve, and so they're going to be able to grow from there. Now they're going to be able to use some of the Cano money, and I think given the fact that it's, as we've talked about before, it is a depressed free agent market. With some of the numbers on some of these premier guys coming down, they're going to be in a great position to take advantage of that. As I said, the Blue Jays are signaling to people they're all in on some of these big names, and the Mets are too. And besides that, there's scant interest. And so it's a great chance if you're the Mets and you want to find your long-term solution at shortstop in Francisco Lindor. If you are aggressive, then you're going to have an excellent chance to get him. If you're aggressive on George Springer, and that's the guy who I think is the most likely guy to wind up among the four we've talked about with the Mets. You're going to wind up with a good chance of getting him. If you're aggressive on JT, Realmuto, who's the best catcher in baseball by far, you're going to have a great chance to get him. You're essentially, I think, in some respects, the Mets, because of the position they're in, they're going to be able to essentially have their pick of the litter. And you do wonder about some of these premier guys, how the you know, the situation with the Blue Jays, the fact that they don't even know where they're going to be playing at the beginning of next year will be a factor for how some of these free agents think.
Buster only joins us here on the show. Buster, Dave yelled at me yesterday because he's all, I mean, he's in full-blown love with Steve
Cohen.
I'm
all in, Buster. I can't help. I'm not going to lie. I won't do it.
So he yelled at me yesterday because he brought up the Charlie Morton news. And I was like, I'm a huge Mets fan. I said, that bothers me a little bit. I mean, he's going to the best team in the division. And when you look at their pitching staff, I mean, that's a huge addition for the Braves.
It's a big one. And I will tell you this. I mean, just in talking with the teams that were involved in this, they say that all along, the feeling that they got was Charlie was either going to go back to the Rays, which is, you know, the team closest to his home in Florida, or he was going to sign with the Braves, the team that drafted him. Those were the only two that go along. But if you're the Mets, you should rightfully be fearful of the Braves. You know, they've won the National League East. They have this tremendous group of young players. They have the reigning MVP, and their rotation is without a doubt right now the deepest and best in baseball in terms of the quality from the beginning. When you're talking about Soroka and Fried, you know, the addition of Drew Smyly, Charlie Morton, Ian Anderson, you know, the Albany kid, and then the depth behind him, Kyle Wright, Bryce Wilson. Kyle Wright pitched well at the end of the regular season. Bryce Wilson had that great appearance in the postseason. They're set up in a way that, you know, other teams are not. I had a general manager say to me yesterday, look, if you're Alex Anthopoulos, now you're sitting back, the general manager of the Braves, you're sitting back, you're just waiting for that slugger that you're going to sign on a short-term deal to be the DH. You're going to sign a second catcher, and your winter work is pretty much done. Like, that team is ready to go for 2021.
Yeah, they're a monster team. They really are very well run. Buster Olney with us here, 98.7 ESPN. So you mentioned Springer. You like his chances with the Mets. Real Muto as well. Bauer is the one that it feels like the Mets fan just desperately wants to have that 1-2 punch of DeGrom and Bauer. And I know it's early, and I know a lot of things can happen, but do you get a sense that he's going to wind up with the Mets, or are you very unsure about him right now?
I'm unsure. I don't feel like I have as good of a feel with that one. You know, it might just simply be, it's kind of like, I mean, the comparison I think we should make all winter is Steve Cohen and Sandy Alderson. They're the people sitting at the poker table, the massive pile of chips, right? And all the other teams are sitting there with these small pile of chips. And if at any point they want, you know, Trevor Bauer, or they want JT, or they want Springer, or they want Lindor, and they shove that pile of chips in the table, the other, everyone else is going to fold.
So there's no, Buster, there's really no reason for Steve Cohen to go out and try to set the market. He can wait.
Yes. 100%. And I would expect, too, just listening to him talk and, you know, how he's made his business. And also, and this has been pointed out to me by other general managers, that, you know, the expectation of, you know, the media, maybe some Mets fans, that the Mets are just going to go out and, you know, sign a bunch of huge checks and just pay retail and everybody. They're like, that's not how Sandy operates. You know, Sandy's going to has enough experience to read where the market's going to be. But they do have the power to get the players they want. And I don't, and I know, of course, they want Trevor. The question is, what does Trevor want? You know, does he, in the end, does he decide he wants the one-year deal for $40 million? Or, you know, does he want the big, massive multi-year deal? That's where agents are saying he really needs to take that, given where baseball's finances are. But we'll just have to wait and see and what kind of priority is. I would say this. I mean, if you want to get the best available catcher, there's only one option. You know, JT Realmuto is, as a GM said to me, it's very rare that you have a player who's by far the preeminent player at his position the way that JT is. You know, George is uniquely, Springer is uniquely positioned as a right-handed hitter who can play center field, balance the lineup, you know, for a local kid, he checks all those boxes. You can, Trevor is clearly the best free agent pitcher, but there are other options in the market, you know, whether it's Jake Odorizzi, who's not going to be as expensive, whether it's you know, trying to work out a deal with the Tampa Bay Rays for Blake Snell. There are some alternatives to Trevor in the market.
Yeah, but I would say if you're only going to get two, like if you're telling me I only get two of the four, when I look at the Mets pitching staff, I would probably put most of the emphasis on the pitching staff, even the bullpen, because when you look at their starting rotation, I mean, Peterson was good, but how many innings is he going to give you next year? I mean, if Lugo's in the rotation, how many innings is he going to give you? And your bullpen still is a little bit shaky. Buster, I want to ask you about the Yankees quick. So I heard Aaron Boone yesterday talk about, you know, Gary Sanchez. you can't trade him, obviously. I mean, he's at the lowest value he's going to ever be at. Do you see this as Gary Sanchez is going to be with the Yankees, and then, you know, they try to add a Yadi Molina or someone to pair with him?
And I'd say this, too, that there is a high volume of good catchers in the marketplace. So if you are, you know, underneath JT, you've got a lot of guys like James McCann, veterans who you could bring in. And that might be the type of guy that the Yankees could turn to on a 1 or 2 year deal that wouldn't be that expensive. You know, what I've heard from other teams is they don't get the sense that the Yankees are, yeah, we're going to dump this guy. Yeah, we're definitely going to trade him. I think there is a lot of intrigue in the industry about whether or not the Marlins, because of the background of their player development people, their front office, might be in the end a good match for the Yankees and Sanchez if they find a deal. You know, they've got a surplus of young players. Not to say that the Yankees are going to get, you know, a big return, but maybe you get a useful reliever or two, that sort of thing. I think would be the expectation. I've heard from people within the organization that there are people who are you know, ready to move on, and because they do have concerns about the combination of defense, but I don't get the sense that that's what Brian Cashman's communicating to other teams, and that's in the end, you know, he's the one who's going to make the decision on that. But there are, you know, a lot of questions, and we saw it play out in the postseason about whether or not Gary's going to be able to bounce back.
Buster only with us here, 98.7 ESPN. So we're on the Yankees. Let me ask you about DJ LeMahieu. He's the million-dollar question this offseason for this team. And I've heard Washington's name thrown out there, and I've heard Toronto's as well. But as we sit here late November, do you still think Yankees, or are you unsure on that one?
I still believe that unless the Blue Jays or the Mets, again, these are teams that in the current context, they seem to be able to position themselves above and beyond where a lot of the other teams are going to be willing to spend, unless DJ becomes the absolute priority for those teams, that the Yankees are still in the end going to wind up being in the ballpark. And there is a great awareness in the organization about how important DJ is to the team and how much of a leader he's considered to be and how much of a body blow it's going to feel like to players in the clubhouse if they don't re-sign him. So they value him, but I do think it just has to play out where, you know, we find out exactly where the Mets are, we find out where the Blue Jays are and how far they're willing to go on him. The other teams that you mentioned, you know, I had a source tell me this morning that he's just not sure that while it's one thing to call and, you know, DJ's agent say, yeah, we have interest in the player, it's a whole other thing to put an offer on the table in a winter in which all these payrolls are being scaled back and there's so many options available in trade. You know, do you want to give 60, 80, you know, $90 million to DJ LeMahieu, or you know what? You could just call the Cubs and get Chris Bryant for 1 year on a, you know, for $18 million with a whole lot less risk. There's a lot of that type of shopping that's going to be going on.
Buster only joins us here on the show. Buster, last one for me. I could see it happening. I don't know how financially they make it work, but apparently they could make it work. Is there really any chance that the Dodgers end up with Nolan Arenado when this is all said and done?
I don't think so. I talked to people in the Dodgers organization, and they threw a complete wet blanket on that whole conversation. You know, for a million different reasons. First off, you look at the Dodgers' recent history. You know, they are not in the business, other than Mookie Betts, of going out and signing players to these massive long-term contracts. And if you take on Arenado in the current marketplace, you know, he's paid under pre-COVID salary numbers. And so the Dodgers probably, in order to make it to even think about a deal for Arenado, would tell the Rockies, look, you know, you guys, and I'm pulling the numbers out of a hat, you guys have to eat 30-40% of his salary in order to make this work, along the lines of what the Rangers did with Alex Rodriguez when they traded him to the Yankees. What do you think the Rockies' reaction to that would be? Wait, we're going to give our division rival our best player, our most prominent player, and we're going to pay most of his salary? Forget it. And here's the other thing, too. Everyone loves Nolan in baseball, and they love his passion. They love how hard he plays. But he does remind you of guys like Dustin Pedroia, Ken Caminiti back in the day, where these guys who are diving all over the place, there is a concern about how long they'll be able to hold up. Nolan plays as hard and as aggressively as anyone we've seen, and you wonder what, how in his mid-30s that will manifest.
We started in Mets. Let's close Mets. Robinson Cano, obviously not going to be with this team for the year. Does he come back to the Mets? Do they buy him out? Do they eat a lot of that salary and move on from him, or do you think he comes back for the Mets next season?
I mean, first off, if you're paying him, if you're locked into paying him $40 million, I'd at least want to see him at the beginning of spring training in 2021 to see if there's any hope. But I will tell you guys this about the timing of all this and how it's being perceived. During, you know, the COVID shutdown, baseball basically stopped PED testing, okay? And they didn't really resume that, from what I've been told, until the end of August. The perception is that the guess, it's the educated guess, is that Robinson, you know, because he got nailed for an old-fashioned steroid, Stanozol, and the guess among people in baseball is that, you know what, because there was no testing in July, no testing beginning of August, that there might have been guys who might have felt like, oh, okay, let's go. And you know, they're not going to test, then I'll go and do some things. And that may be what explains how much better Robbie looked in 2020 than he did the previous year. That's all going to be part of the evaluation that the Mets have to do. But, you know, they're now among teams, people beginning to wonder, like, okay, these guys who had massive spikes in performance in 2020 at the end of the year, maybe that had something to do with it.
All right, Buster, listen, great stuff. Have a terrific holiday. We always appreciate when you join us for a few minutes, and we will talk to you very soon. And the second the Mets are active and making moves, we're calling you.
I'll be dying to talk to you. This is going to be so much fun this winter, seeing them active.
Great stuff. Buster, appreciate it as always. We'll talk to you.
See ya. Bye.
All right, there you go. How good?
One of my favorite guests of all time. One of my favorite guests of all time.
Oh, he's the best. But how good is this?
Did you hear him too, though? Did kind of allude to? Because I was going to ask the question, but I felt like I didn't have to ask it. The DH, which is important for the Mets. We got to have the DH. We have to.
You have the DH and then Dom Smith or Alonso or, you know,
it's critical.
McNeil or, you know, any one of these guys can land.
And can you really have, I mean, you asked the question, but can you, I mean, to Buster's point, we talked about this. I mean, how much better Robinson Cano was this year as opposed to the previous year?
I mean, offensively, he was very good.
Well, for what reason?
Well, I think you have your answer.
Okay, so you're going to... Now clean. You saw how bad he was clean. You're going to want him around for two more years at $40 million?
No. Just the opposite for me. I don't want him ever to suit up again for the Mets.
And Brody killed us with this deal. Killed us with this deal.
Brody, thank God you got Steve Cohen. Because Brody made moves that it takes a guy with $15 billion to get out from under from.
Yeah, but it aggravates me now because under the current circumstances with Steve not having, you know, suffered the loss. Like, there'll be plenty of losses because the Mets just were so poorly run. I mean, he's going to lose money, and that's fine with him. But he also, I mean, Buster said it, he's the guy at the table with all the chips. But just think about the amount of moves. Like, had we not given away as many prospects as we gave away in some brutal moves, we gave a prospect away for Mariznick. We gave a prospect away for Billy Hamilton. I mean, Stroman didn't even pitch for us.
Right.
We gave away two prospects for him.
And not even to mention the Seattle one, yeah.
Well, the Seattle one, that's the glaring one. That may be the worst move ever. But, I mean, Lindor's available in trade. Arenado's available. Like, you have your pick of some of the best players in baseball right now. And the reason why Sandy wouldn't do it, like, I mean, you've heard Sandy a couple different times. Lindor is awesome, dude. Like, if you told me right now Lindor was our shortstop, I would be ecstatic. But he's like, we have no depth in our farm system. Like, I would rather go free agency because I don't want to give up more prospects.
They want to build up the farm system. You're right. They have been put in a position of distress. If this was more Wilpons owning the team and running the team and Brody Van Wagenen, it would be the same laughing stock moving forward.
I mean, you get Lindor. He's only, I mean, that,
was he 26?
But that's Cano's money right there.
Right. Yes.
Like, he makes, you're going to have to sign him after the season. You'll sign him to an extension. But that's, I mean, that's the $20 million right there.
Yeah,
and then you sign Springer.
You're in position.
You get Bauer.
You're in great position to navigate how you want. And you know what the nice thing is? The Mets are going to set the market. Like, this free agency is going to go as the Mets haven't moved forward. You've never had that happen.
No, and especially because there's only a couple teams that want to spend money.
Right.
So you're not going to. You shouldn't.
I mean, he
have
said
to
the
overpay.
Mets in Toronto is it really?
Yeah. Well, you shouldn't have to overpay. I mean, unless all of a sudden, you know, Toronto is, you know, a guy that you want.
But even
you
if you lose out on the one guy that they're going to go crazy for, it still leaves you a lot of talent available.
But, I mean, let's be honest, because hockey's dealing with the same thing. If you were DJ LeMahieu and the Mets made you an offer that was a little less than the Blue Jays, not knowing what it was going to, like, where were we going to play? Like, are we going to start the season in Toronto? Will it be, like, we have no idea. I mean, wouldn't you probably lean towards signing with the Mets?
Yes.
You like New York.
Because you're New York. You're familiar with New York. You've succeeded in New York. Absolutely. That's where you'd
And if Trevor Bauer wants a one-year deal, I'm all in for the one-year deal.
I'll give him 1 year and $40 million.
Whatever you want. Like, let's figure it out. Let's see if he can actually pitch in New York.
And then you can throw him every 3 days.
Well, yeah. I mean, but I mean, even just to get, like, how many times have we seen it fail in New York? Like, it's not the same in New York. So you're telling me for 1 year, I get to audition him in New York and see how good he is?
I absolutely would. Although I got to tell you, I think that guy in New York would own it.
Oh, I think so too. I hope so. But I mean, he's talking about JT Realmuto. I love JT Realmuto. He's a catcher. I mean, he's not playing 150 games.
No, he's playing 5 days a week. If you're lucky.
When you look at the Mets pitching staff, right? It's DeGrom, who you love, best pitcher in baseball. Stroman. Peterson will be on an innings limit.
Yes.
Syndergaard coming back from Tommy John.
You don't know when or how effective.
And Lugo, how many innings is Lugo going to give you?
Yeah. No, I think you need Bauer. I agree with you.
You got to build up the depth. Have to.
But there's none of these guys that you can say you don't need. You need Springer. You need Realmuto. The one you probably need the least is Lindor.
Well, no, but I mean, Lindor is, I mean, he serves a bunch of different purposes. I mean, he's unbelievable defensively. And
I'm not saying you don't want him. I'm not saying he's not an upgrade.
I would say money-wise, like, I could live with paying a whole hell of a lot less on a much shorter-term deal with James McCann if it means I'm getting Springer and Bauer.
Right, or Zunino, or Molina. I love Molina.
Yeah, I know, but McCann is probably that second guy if you're not going to get Realmuto.
That's fine. No, you're not going to get an argument from me. All right, we want to remind you, you can listen to us anywhere. Just click Listen Live at ESPNNewYork.com. Find 98.7 ESPN on the ESPN app or the TuneIn app, or simply tell your smart speaker, hey, play 98.7 ESPN at 98.7 ESPN New York. We go where you go. Today on ESPN Daily, Jeremy Lin rocketed to basketball stardom with the Knicks when Linsanity swept through sports after a 2019 season. In China, Lin gives a candid, in-depth interview about his hope for an NBA return on ESPN Daily. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcast. And observations coming your way in about 10 minutes from right now on 98.7. Let's bring him in. Friend of the program, joins us every single Wednesday right around this time, and that is Dan Graziano, NFL Insider. Good morning, Dan. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you today?
We are terrific. Giants fans are very excited for Thanksgiving in the New York area. I want to ask you, and you might have an answer that just you don't know. Do you know anything about Brandon Allen at all? Is he going to start a quarterback for the Bengals this Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, he started 3 games last year for the Broncos. Remember the Broncos started everybody. But, he played okay. He kicked around for a little while. He was back up out in L.A. with the Rams. And, he's been around a little bit. Look, I mean, he's been on their practice squad. They started Ryan Finley last year for a stretch, and they know what he brings and, more importantly, doesn't. So they feel good about Brandon Allen and feel like he deserves a shot. It's not the greatest spot because, as you guys know, the Giants' defense is kind of an underrated unit this year. They've been playing well. They're not easy to score points against. So, we'll see. But, look, the Giants have film on Finley in the Bengals' offense. They don't have film on Allen in the Bengals' offense. So maybe Cincinnati feels like this is worth a shot because, they got to try something.
Dan, when you look at the NFC East,
that's
all they got. And I'm going to ask this question for Dave because he's so excited. So you got Washington, Dallas tomorrow. Dave's hoping that Washington wins because you've already beaten Washington. When you look at the NFC East, is it fair to say that right now in this moment that the Giants are playing the best football in that division?
Yes, but that's damning with faint praise. I think, they are. I like the way the Giants play. Like, they're fun and they're exciting because you can see kind of how it's coming together under Joe Judge. And you can imagine it with Saquon Barkley plugged in and the difference that might make. And, an offseason, if they have a good offseason with the draft and free agency and put some pieces around Daniel Jones and, with the 2 games in a row with Daniel Jones hasn't turned it over, that's the best part, right? If you're a Giants fan, because that's what he has to fix. So, yeah, I think I don't think they're a fun team for people to play. Personnel wise, do they have enough to win the NFC East? Maybe, but is that Is that okay? Like, would you rather like have a non-playoff team draft pick, or would you rather be picking like 22nd this year? So I think it's fun. I think it's a fun time to be a Giants fan in that there's a direction, a clear direction, and there's hope. And in terms of who wins the NFC East this year, I'm just not sure it's that big a deal.
All right, but let's have this question, because you kind of posed it out there. Yeah. And we've had this conversation today and the last couple of days on the station. What would you rather? Would you rather win the division and host a playoff game, or would you rather go 4-12 and wind up with a 6th overall selection this offseason?
Well, who am I? Am I the owner of the team, or am I a fan of the team?
You're a fan of the team.
Actually, you know what? Because a home playoff game doesn't even make the difference to the owner anymore this year.
Not financially, no.
Fans there anyway. So you're not going to make any money off the home playoff game. So, yeah, maybe. I mean, look, I think I find it hard to believe that people truly connected with the team, you know, put the game on every week and root for the team to lose. Like, I think you always want, when you watch your team, you probably want them to win the game, but that's why you do it. But, yeah, big picture, sure. I mean, you could make the case that the Giants would be better off not winning the division because the pick would be much different. Well, let's look. We have the – right now they're projected to pick 9. In our, you know, when we do the thing where we project where the draft picks will end up based on the remaining schedule and where they stand now, the Eagles, as division champions, would be projected to pick what? If they had the last of the playoff team drafted.
I guess that's 18, right? Or 19?
So, yeah, something like that. So, yeah, I think it's, I mean, it makes a difference. In terms of that range of the draft, like if you're not in the top 5, maybe you can argue that it doesn't make that big a difference, but. You know, I think they need picks, and they need the picks to be good. And, you know, if you can get a better one, so much the better. I'm not suggesting they should lose or that people should root for them to lose. But, yeah, I think winning this year's NFC East is not necessarily going to be a ticket to the Super Bowl, right? So I think the key focus, if you're a Giants fan, is the direction of the team, the way that they play under Joe Judge, and feeling good about what the future might possibly hold.
Yeah, but, Dan, isn't that, I mean – yeah, winning the NFC East is, I mean, that's nothing to, you know, to phone home about. But it is, I mean, yeah. You're going to give your young quarterback, this team, the opportunity to get some experience in a playoff game, meaningful football.
Sure.
But also, I mean, wouldn't you hate to have it where this team does, you know, all of a sudden, you know, start to lose these football games, Daniel Jones is turning the football over, and you don't have a top 3 pick, you have the 6th overall pick, and you don't feel like you have your quarterback? That would be a terrible place to be.
Yeah, it would. Because if you need to go think about a quarterback, you don't want to be picking 19th. So, yeah, I mean, that's why I'm saying, like, you can tie yourself up in knots over this stuff, right? I mean, like, if, for the Jets fan, it seems pretty cut and dried right now because you have a shot to get at number 1. And that, you know, who you would take. So, if you're talking about, do you want to be picking 6th or 9th or 17th? Or, you know, I'm just not sure what a difference that makes. I would enjoy, you know, feeling good and hopeful about the team and monitor progress versus the standings at this point.
And you're going to be playing meaningful football into December, especially if you win this game on Sunday against Cincinnati, which matters, which is what Wellington Mara's old adage always was, right? Give me meaningful football the final 4 games of the season.
I mean, you know, like, yeah, I'm kind of making both arguments here, but like, if you get in the playoffs...
Take a side, Dan. Come on.
We have a shot, right? I mean, you get hot, and all of a sudden Daniel Jones turns into... You know, Joe Flacco or Eli Manning for one great January, then all of a sudden, you know, maybe something incredible happens. Unlikely, but maybe.
Oh, God, imagine that.
God
all
forbid,
right, Dan,
for Dave's safety.
I just lost
God
control.
Forbid.
Like, I lost all function here.
I wrecked Thanksgiving for Dave.
Yeah, you really have. I don't even know. I forgot who
you
we're
definitely
talking
wrecked
to. Dan Graziano,
pants,
that's
that.
Who, on 98.7 ESPN. Dan, what outside, I guess I know the answer, but I'm going to ask you anyway. How are they playing this game tomorrow night? Between Baltimore and Pittsburgh.
So you go back to the beginning of the season when they were postponing games. There were a couple factors at work. One is, of course, that there were places to put them, right? There were bye weeks and you could move things around. No longer the case. There's only 2 teams that have their byes left, and it's Carolina and Tampa next week. So the rescheduling is more difficult. Not that that's the primary concern, but it's one of the issues. The other thing is we're a couple months into this now, and the league has adapted its procedures and its reactions to positive tests in a way that the science and experience directs them to. So they feel like they have a procedures in place that will limit the spread within the team facilities, right? Meetings are being done virtually. You're supposed to wear masks on the practice field. If you're not following the procedures and you have an outbreak, then that's kind of on you. And if you have to play shorthanded, then that's kind of your fault. That's a cold way to put it, but it's not a, you know, it's not completely out of line with the way it's being presented to teams. So if they feel like there's more spread and the Ravens can't be together in the same place to play a game tomorrow night, then they'll postpone the game. They'll find something to do with it. If they feel like the spread is limited and it's generating from outside the facility, like community transmission, right? Somebody got it, somebody's kid brought it home from school, or somebody got it at the supermarket, then that's different from, hey, it's spreading in the team facility because people are having contact in meeting rooms or weight rooms, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a lot of moving parts. Where it gets weird is, do you postpone the game because the Ravens are shorthanded? And I think that's probably not likely to happen. I think the answer is you postpone the game if you feel like it's not safe to play it. But in terms of the Ravens being shorthanded, that's kind of like a tough luck situation this year. You saw the 49ers were shredded in their last game, right? It was a primetime game, and they barely had enough starting players to play it. Obviously, they have injuries too. But, I think what you're going to see here going forward is the league is going to lean very hard toward, can we get this game played? And you're going to have to come up with a lot of reasons not to in order to get it postponed at this point, because there just aren't a lot of places to move these games on the schedule.
Yeah. Dan Graziano joins us here on the show. Dan, speaking of Baltimore, in your mind, what do you see with this team? What's going on? I mean, they were a juggernaut last season. It just seems like they offensively just aren't nearly as dynamic as they were last season.
I think there's a big picture perspective to say, like, look, everything they did last offseason in terms of evolving the offense and putting in stuff for Lamar Jackson worked like a charm, and they had this monster year, and he wins MVP, and they win 14 games. Whereas this offseason, just because every year is different, whatever they put in didn't click, and it's not working as well. And, you know, it's probably unrealistic to expect them to go 14-2 every year, but they probably should have been better offensively this year than they have been. Detail-wise, if you drill down on it, the numbers we're seeing indicate that their run game just isn't as effective between the tackles. They're not sustaining drives. Last year, their average drive covered 40 yards. It was the number one figure in the league. This year, their average drive covers about 31 yards. That's the 24th highest figure in the league. That's a pretty big difference. You know, they're not gaining as many yards on first and second down, so they're in longer distance to go on third downs. And, how do you explain that? Well, nobody ever likes to talk about offensive line, but Marshall Yanda was a really outstanding interior offensive lineman for them who retired this offseason, and they haven't effectively replaced him. Run game problems could generate off of something like that, and the margins in this league are very small, and it doesn't take much to swing it the other way. So they're dealing with a few things that are structural, and I think a few things that are related to scheme as well.
All right, Dan, great stuff as always. Have a safe, wonderful holiday, and we will talk to you next week.
All right, guys, thanks for having me. Happy Thanksgiving to all of you and everyone who's listening.
That, of course, is the great Dan Graziano. All right, DCR with you, 98.7 ESPN Thanksgiving Eve Day. And what would that be without an observations?
Do you need to feel better about your life?
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this.
And totally redeem yourself!
Let's take a look at Rick's Knobservation.
Welcome back, dum-dum.
All right, boys, happy Thanksgiving. I guess since it's just the two of you today, I will handle the observations for you.
Oh, I didn't know that. Welcome, Raymond.
Surprise. Happy Thanksgiving. We'll play a quick game of Did It Happen in Florida? Man sues the doctor. A man was experiencing depression as a result of his failing marriage, so he went to his family physician who counseled him on ways to improve his marriage and prescribed him some marijuana and CBD. The patient now claims in a lawsuit that all along the doctor, Ronald Rosen, was having an affair with his wife. In a complaint filed Monday, local musician and financial advisor Pearson Tone seeks $2.9 million from Rosen for professional negligence. Did this happen in Florida?
Ooh, that's a beauty. I'm going to say, did it happen in Florida? I'm going to say no, not Florida.
That's so selfish. You know what would make this affair even better? If we had some free weed.
Yeah.
I'll go with Dave. He's on fire. I'll say it didn't happen in Florida.
Yeah, basically Florida, Northwest, Oregon, guys. Oregon. Bend, Oregon.
Bend, Oregon.
That's too
it's
much.
It's too perfect. We got time for one more real quick.
Yeah, please.
All right.
Yeah,
have you guys seen this whistle mask? You know, it's a mask-up society. We have to wear the mask. We have to have the mask when we're out, right?
Yes.
So when you're playing a game of organized sports like basketball and there's referees involved, the referees have masks, but they need to account for the whistle. So how do you solve that? The whistle mask. Karen Howell on Twitter with the picture of it. My cousin took these pictures of a whistle mask. If I had to see it, you have to see it too. The best way I can describe it, guys, is if you've ever seen SpongeBob SquarePants, there's a character called Squidward. That's exactly what it looks like.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like you're concealing something in your face mask. Looks like Renan's mask.
Oh, no. On
yeah.
Thanksgiving, don't
That's
do
what
that.
It looks like. What do you want to tell
you? A protrusion from the mask, huh?
Yeah. It looks like a boner on your face. That's what it looks
That'll
like.
That'll do it for an observations, boys.
Lovely. Happy Thanksgiving, Raymond, Rick, everybody out there. I'll be back Friday from 9 to noon, but have a great Thanksgiving. It's Rule 76.
No excuses. Eat like a champion. It's DiPietro, Canty, Rothenberg, and...
Hey, everybody.
On 98.7 ESPN.
DCR is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Catch them weekday mornings at 9 on 98.7 ESPN.